you might have. If you feel you're not on the notification list and wish to be put on the list, contact Monique Madrid, our district clerk, or myself, and there'll be some slides up with email addresses and phone numbers here in a minute. So, okay. If we can go to the slide with the agenda on it, Jesse, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. And I'll try to figure out how to do this remote so you're not jumping up and down. Okay. This just shows today's agenda. We could go around the room if you're okay introducing yourself. And first of all, my name's Bob Gressens. I'm the district engineer for the Cambria Community Services District. And we have our board president, Gail Robinette, here, our new board member, Greg Sanders, and also our general manager, Jerry Gruber, here. And if you want to just kind of go this way through the room, introduce yourself if you feel like it. If you don't, you don't have to. So go ahead, Jan. Great.
And I'm Lynn Anderson. I'm an interested resident of Cambria.
Okay. Great. And I see Tom Gray just walked in, so hi, Tom. Anyway, thank you again for being here and taking the time out of your day. I have a presentation to go through. I'll just give you a quick run-through of the groundwater management plan, and then we'll have some public comments at the end. So I welcome your comments. I encourage you to speak if you have questions or other thoughts on the groundwater management plan. Next slide. Let me try this and see if it works before I... Denver has. I don't know. Maybe I'm hitting the wrong button here. Do you know? Is it the side button here? Or? You'll take it with us here. Can we? Is this the next slide? Okay. Thank you. For part two of our agenda, I'll introduce the plan. I'll give you a brief and a general information on groundwater management planning, and then just highlight the key points of each section. So next slide, please. Okay, the general information, this plan that we're undertaking is going to conform with the old AB 3030. That was passed in 1992. That was kind of a landmark legislation. It's been subsequently updated by the state legislature over time, so we've considered those updates in this plan that we're doing to make sure we caught the required components of the plan. We actually did a plan, the district did a plan in 1980, which was called a basin management program. It was more specific to the San Simeon Creek watershed, and it preceded, you know, of course, the 1992 legislation, and it also probably didn't have all the components that are required of the legislation. It was more in response to permit conditions at the time from both the State Water Resource Control Board dealing with the diversion permits, as well as the California Coastal Commission on coastal development permitting at the time. But I was able to use that as a good reference, and we have used that in the past as kind of a quasi groundwater management plan. The sections in the water code, for those who are interested, are 10753 through 10753.10. There's very specific language in the California water code on this. It is a Proposition 84 grant funding requirement, which did catch up with us and is pushing our time frame and our turnaround, kind of the urgency to get this completed. Again, it will include the required components that the state has outlined, and it's important to note that this is not a 2014-based Sustainable Groundwater Management Act plan. There's a difference. The 2014 plan has kind of a two basic step process to it, where you form a groundwater sustainability agency, and then they're required in turn to then develop a sustainable plan, and we're not doing that in this plan. This is more considered an AB 3030 plan, in kind of loose jargon. Next slide, please. So the plan that's posted on our website has basically seven sections, including, and there's a reference and appendices that'll go into it. And I'll just touch on each one as we go. Next slide, please. So the plan purpose is really to work with the stakeholders in the basins to develop and maintain a sustainable, reliable, high-quality groundwater supply. That's the main purpose. And, of course, in our area, we have the two basins. We have the San Simeon Creek Basin, and that little number behind is what the state uses for its identifier, 3-35. And then the Santa Rosa Creek Basin is 3-36. And the figure to the right, which is in the report, and much clearer in the report, is from the old USGS report. I just kind of pulled the key into that, but it does outline the basin boundaries, the watershed boundaries of the two basins. The darker coloring is the actual aquifer boundary itself. So that's in the first section of the report. Next slide, please. One of the key parts of the plan is to develop basin management objectives. And our draft objectives right now, we have four of them. The first one is to monitor and manage water and wastewater facilities to ensure protection of the area's fishery and riparian habitat. And that is almost right out of the old 1980 basin program that I mentioned earlier. The second basin management objective is to operate, plan, and provide CCSD water and wastewater facilities in a manner to prevent seawater intrusion and to avoid inelastic ground subsidence. And that is both meeting requirements of the state and also addressing local concerns. Objective three is to work cooperatively with the district customers, the agricultural community, regulatory and resource agencies to protect and maintain groundwater and surface water quality. We're going to work together. We're going to collaborate. Four is to continue to monitor and collect baseline groundwater elevation and quality data for use by resource and regulatory agencies in assessing progress, developing action plans, and developing future groundwater management plan updates. There's a lot of data collection involved in this program. So next slide. Section two of the report talks about interagency coordination and collaboration. And this is an area where we have kind of a present tense and a future tense discussed. We have the need to move rather quickly in getting this plan done, but I also realize that collaboration takes time. So in more of a future sense, this section outlines some suggestions for your next update in which you would form a steering committee. It'd be a diverse group of people that when you have more time, more resources to devote to it, that would be a preferable approach over the long haul, but those can take years to implement, and we just don't have the years to implement this current plan right now. So we talk about our interagency coordination more in the present tense, where we've done the outreach noticing to agencies and interested parties. We're going to do a review in response to the comments we receive. We're using our website quite a bit to show any updates that we make to the plan as a result of any review comments we get. So that's our current approach. Next slide, please. The current requirements of the state are to include groundwater recharge and mapping. So we've done that. We've provided in the report a relatively new map. It is really based on older geological data. There was a lot of mapping done by Professor Hall out of, I think it was UCLA at the time. So we utilize a lot of his past efforts. I've spoken with a local expert that understands, that gave me some guidance on it. That was Tim Cleeth, just to give me some guidance on what areas should be highlighted on this map, and we're pretty comfortable that it's an accurate depiction of the recharge areas. Next slide, please. There's another requirement to have groundwater and surface water monitoring. And in that section, we talk about the groundwater elevation monitoring that we do routinely, but also there's a broader statewide effort that we're going to contribute to called CASGEM, or the California Statewide Groundwater Elevation Monitoring Program, which is a web-based system that we provide data on our wells to that the state can track. We'll probably be coordinating with the county some on that as well, because we know the county is tracking certain well data. Besides the need to be in the CASGEM, we needed to do this for permitting and for regulatory requirements that we have to meet, as well as operational needs. So if there needs to be an adjustment made to the operation, our operators need to be tracking that groundwater elevation data. There's another discussion in this section on groundwater quality monitoring. Again, it's a permitted, a regulatory requirement that we have to do this for. I talk a little bit about the salt and nutrient management planning requirement that the is required for recycled water. Just about every agency in the state is behind on this, so it is a future requirement we're going to have to get our arms around. Thankfully, with the new emergency water supply project, we are helping our cause, because we do remove a certain amount of nitrates from the groundwater, which was, I think, touched on by Howard Kolb from the regional board when he did his presentation last April on the total maximum daily load report that he was working on. So we are indirectly doing that now, but we need to do more of an effort. And again, quality monitoring is an operational need as well to adjust our operations. There's land subsidence monitoring discussed. Back in the 70s, this was an issue for Cambria CSD, particularly before the San Simeon aquifer wells were built and constructed, which was the late 70s. They had experienced some subsidence along the lower portion of the Santa Rosa aquifer. And I did get a hold of a geologist's report on that that was interesting to read, that what was going on back in that time frame. And one of the factors that he mentioned was a flood that destabilized some of the bank back then. So there's things you wouldn't think about that related to subsidence that are discussed in that old report. But we have not had an issue here, particularly since the San Simeon well field went online, and you had both well fields to use and go back and forth between. But again, it's a need to track that. There's groundwater surface water interaction monitoring described. Again, it's a permitted regulatory requirement. To back up what we're now doing, we have an adaptive management plan in place for the emergency water supply project off of San Simeon Creek Road. And that includes biologists that track the habitat. And it's adaptive because we can make adjustments. If the biologists sense there's something that needs to be corrected, we can change our operation to adapt to it. And that is in place right now for the emergency water supply project. Next slide, please. Again, this particular section on wellhead protection, well abandonment, and well construction, this is a state requirement to have this. As I mentioned in the TEXA report, this is administered by the SLO County Environmental Health Department. We would certainly coordinate with them. They have an excellent website if anyone's interested in learning more on this. The standards that they reference are the California Department of Water Resources bulletins that are listed there, 7481 and 7490. It's very important to follow these requirements and their permitting procedures, because of the way that contaminants can enter a borehole and travel down it and contaminate the aquifer. There's ways that contamination, if the well's not constructed properly, it can travel between the casing and the borehole and go, you know, from one stratum to another. So it's very important to have this in place. We also, the CCSD is also required to do a 5-year update to what they call a watershed sanitary survey. We recently completed one, and that looks at what the risks are to our wells. and it's related to this section, so I discussed that a little bit. And I just kind of pop out one of the maps that was done as part of that effort in this particular section. Next slide, please. So we have a recommendations section right now in draft form that goes in a little more detail, but essentially it is to regularly review, engage the progress in meeting the basin management objectives, continue to foster collaboration with the basin stakeholders, allow more time for future plan updates to incorporate a steering committee report approach, coordinate future groundwater management plan updates with the five-year cycle of updating our urban water management plan, as well as our watershed sanitary surveys, because you get information out of those particular efforts that could be useful in a groundwater management plan. And lastly, the financial planning and budgeting to allow funding of future plan updates, as well as projects that would support meeting the basin management objectives. So that's pretty much the gist of the plan. Next slide, please. And I'll just mention, I brought a printout with me of the plan, and you probably, those who have been on our website have seen this, and if, you know, we can arrange to probably make hard copies on special request. We probably have to charge for the cost of the copies, but what I started doing on the updates, because I did see an error on one of the pages the other day, so I'm flagging it with a call out where the correction's made. And the very next page, I inserted this revision log. So I put the date, summarize what the revision is, what page to go to. So when you go to that page, like this one I think was on page 15, you'll see a similar flag on there. So I'm trying to make it, you know, as clear as possible, you know, where the change is made, and we'll just keep updating the plan that way. So if I get some recommendations that we say, hey, that's a great recommendation, let's do it, that's the way it'll show up in the update that'll get posted on the website. The next item on the agenda is to talk about the October 29th workshop number 2, which next, it's a Thursday, correct, Jerry? Thursday, starting at 2 o'clock again in this room. We'll focus more on any comments or updates to the plan at that time. I'll get a little more into the plan recommendations. Again, it's going to be here starting at 2 o'clock. I'd encourage you to go to our website if you haven't already, but just check it regularly. We'll try to get our notices out by emails to those that are on our email list of updates. Again, our website, if you just Google CambriaCSD.org, should pop up. We also have our resolution that was approved on the 15th there that includes directions on how to participate in the plan development. And I've already talked about the last two here. So next slide, please. And just to outline the plan participation process, we have, we're maintaining a list of interested parties, and we have, we've been sending out email notices to people who have requested to be on the list. If you feel you're not on the list, you can write either Monique Madrid or myself and ask to be put on the list. If you have a problem with computers or something, let us know. Maybe we can do something different than emails. Email seems to be the way people like to communicate now. Or you can call our office directly at our 927-6223 number, and they can route you to write either Monique or myself to take care of your request. Again, the draft plan is posted at the CambriaCSD.org website. Written comments should be sent to me. My address is bgressens, all one word, at CambriaCSD.org. Again, you can call our open line, the 6223 number, and they can chase me down. Again, we have our workshop on the 29th. We'll accept written comments through the whole process of updating the plan. My preference as staff would be if you can get them to me by the 29th, that would be ideal, because this is moving pretty fast, and we're trying to get this onto a special board meeting of November 12th. So with that, at this point I should turn it over to you. I've talked more than enough, and we really want to hear from you if you have any comments. So
at
thanks again for being here.
If I could, just for our records, if you do want to speak, if you just write your name and just write groundwater management, you know, you abbreviate it, so we have a documentation of the comments, which is really helpful in legitimizing the process. So if anybody, you know, and I'm not going to time you for 3 minutes. There's not going to be time today. No red lights are going to go off. Plus, I don't know how to work that thing. But yes, sir.
Jerry,
how about if I do this? You just tell me your name, and I'll write it down. And then
it's so much easier. I should set up your mic.
Sure, here. Great. Bob, in the draft groundwater management plan, you have a chart. It's the inflow-outflow chart. How does that chart relate to sustainable yield for the district? Is there a relationship? And if so, what is the relationship? How does it work? How do we interpret that?
Yeah, that's the groundwater balance that was actually done as part of the 1998 USGS study, and it looks at the inflows and outflows of both basins, the San Simeon and Santa Rosa. We updated that slightly after talking to one of the report's authors back when we were doing a 2005 urban water management plan, and it was close to being balanced. But we have to look at the time frame involved, and that was in I want to say the 1988-89 time frame. And I believe there was around 800 acre feet pumped by the district. That shows up in municipal pumping back then. But it was part of the modeling work that the USGS did to determine where the water was going in both basins to figure out the balance. Now, what I suggest in the recommendations is to review that periodically, try to update that. You know, you could look at what the district pumps versus whatever the estimate might be on agricultural use. And that's the big unknown I don't have right now is agricultural use. The USGS made some estimates on that in developing that model. But it's kind of the key way to look at both groundwater basins to see if they're in balance. If you get out of balance, you start overdrafting them, and that's when problems begin. So I don't consider them to be in overdraft mode. There's a limit to the accuracy of that old modeling. I think they said it was 2 digits max. So it balanced out back then. Our pumping has gone down since then. So unless something changes fairly significantly with another user in the area, my definite hope is it stays in balance. But it's something we should keep our eye on.
How do you think the current drought is going to affect the model for determining sustainable yield?
Well, we have a couple things in our favor and a couple things against us. You know, lack of precipitation obviously is decreasing the amount of water entering our watersheds. Things we have going in our favor is we have tremendous conservation happening, you know, 35% to 40% by Cambrians this last year or two, which has certainly cut down the amount of withdrawal from the aquifer. So we, by being in a stage three and then further limiting the use of outdoor potable watering, has greatly cut down the amount that usually went out of the aquifer. The other thing that's happening is we have the emergency water supply project that's now taking water near the percolation ponds and re-injecting that water into the aquifer, and we're still wrestling on how to report that, and it's not in this current plan. Is that going to be an adder somehow into it? We don't have that balance worked out, and I'm going to have to get more help in future updates to figure out exactly how we're going to show that, and we need to gather more data as that system continues to operate. It's still kind of in its infancy at this time. So I don't know, that's kind of a roundabout answer. Did that get close enough for your purpose?
We don't know yet.
We don't know yet. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so my name is George Kendall.
I've got a couple of comments or kind of questions. Well, the first is a comment, and that would be in your interagency collaboration effort, you're going to reach out to a couple of people. I would suggest that you include the Cattlemen's Association and the NRCS over in Templeton. And I'm pleased that you included the RCD. They're very farmer-friendly. And then a question on the, you talked about groundwater recharge, and it wasn't clear to me what your objective is right now in the report, whether it's just something you're going to study like the RCD study that was just completed, or if you're going to recommend or plan to recommend some actual action. And the reason I asked about that is we have, since the 1800s, sometime in the 1800s, we have done some various reclamation projects around Walker Ditch being the probably the biggest example, where some of the creeks have been straightened and some of the little side tributaries have also been straightened, and the system is flashier than it used to be pre-settlement. And there are some practices that can be done that are relatively non-invasive that can slow storm flood, storm waters down and let them be retained in the higher up in the watershed, such as sediment basins or recharge basins. So I'm wondering, are you going to recommend anything be done or just going to study it and wait for future efforts?
Jerry was just reminding me about our kind of our area of control. We don't go all the way up into the watersheds, even though we're talking about them right now. I think what you're saying makes a lot of good sense. I think we're certainly open in working with the resource conservation districts and developing, you know, ideas and concepts. I commented a little bit on their most recent report. I think there's some limited opportunities to maybe use treated wastewater effluent possibly in the lower portion of Santa Rosa Aquifer, which I kind of allude to a little bit in some of the discussion. We have a little bit of a problem going further up into the watershed. Just, there's cost. Our water, our recycled water, our wastewater is a limited resource now because we are using it. We're using it on the new emergency water supply project, and we are treating that and reinjecting it, and it's actually going to our potable wells now. So you know, there's only so much treated wastewater, high-quality reuse water that can go around now. So that's part of it. But if there's a way we can work with the RCDs, we certainly would entertain that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I do remember that you mentioned the possibility of some recharge in the lower Santa Rosa Creek, and I think that's a great idea. And I would suggest that if you can do something, the rodeo grounds or maybe further downstream, you might positively impact the groundwater level in the Shamwell Park area, mm-hmm. and reduce your...
Certainly.
You know, be able to use the upstream wells more.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Clyde Warren. I just haven't really had time to look at this, and so anyway, but you know, we do recognize, you've recognized our agreement and stuff, so we'll just, I tried to print out a hard copy, but my computer side didn't want to talk to my printer, so stuck.
You want this one?
Sure. Here.
I can print another. You're here. You let's just let us know.
If anybody needs a hard copy, we'll print it out for you and get it to you, okay? How does that sound?
I'll you know, look at the October 29th meeting for comments.
Okay, thank you.
Jan Podoti. I'm primarily here to demonstrate that I'm an interested party. I have a couple of very minor kind of housekeeping comments. One involves on page 2, the date that you have that the San Simeon Creek wells was installed is actually a year off. They were installed in March and April of 1978 instead of 1979. And that information is on your well logs. They were drilled by the Salinas Pump Company. I want to commend you on the comments that you've made in here that the reason that the upstream riparian was not receptive to accepting effluent for irrigation purposes had to do with the requirement for the residence time established, you know, by the health department, and I certainly had a concern if the health department wasn't satisfied with the product that you're coming from the treatment plant, that that they required the 60-day residence time, that I was equally uncomfortable. So anyhow, and you accurately referenced that. Okay. And then also, you accurately referenced the fact that obviously not only have Cambrians done kind of heroic conservation, but the agriculture users have voluntarily reduced irrigation by, in our case, probably 70%, trying to get Cambria through this. On page 21, you have a copy of the well reads, and you have have mine down as, and I believe one of Clyde Warren's down, as privately owned, well confidential, which that is actually the official, that's like well logs and things, and that is really the officially how it is, but I'm into full disclosure and the fact that my well reads have been on your website for public exposure for years now.
Yeah.
I don't think I have much to hide, so I don't think that's necessary. That you know, whatever it's a requirement that the district monitor wells in San Simeon Creek, record those, make them available to the State Water Risk Control Board as a result of the 1988 hearings, and so those provide very valuable information. I mean, here's an example as a longitudinal hydrologic section. This one's actually a 1981 model, but this is what the USGS and the State Water Risk Control Board does with the monitoring. And I will say I've been a little disappointed, and it seems as though, and it may be a budgeting issue or a staffing issue or whatever, but they're monitoring less and less of our wells in San Simeon Creek, and there's a longer duration between the monitoring points. It used to be every well bi-monthly, and now we're down to whatever they are, half a dozen wells or so, and it doesn't give you can't create as an accurate a hydrograph with the limited data that you're collecting. So, and then another housekeeping issue is on that same page, you begin recording them from west to east, from the ocean, from the state park, and they come all the way through your wells to SS1. And I've discussed this with the well monitors as well, and I think I actually, some staff members. And then when you get to my wells, all of a sudden they go from east to west. So when you get to the column here, which I assume is the reference point elevations, this column here, it's not labeled, but you might want to put a label on that. Somebody wants to know what that number is. It paints, it's kind of a funny curve. You know, you have well level elevations rising as they should from sea level to the east, and all of a sudden you get to mine and they're doing the opposite. Mm-hmm. So I think it just it doesn't change the data at all, but it just would make it much more logical mm-hmm. to understand, where you just have a continuous flow of numbers, and they will actually, you know, give you a picture of what's happening in the basin. Mm-hmm. You know? And you know what? I think that's, you know, I haven't had a chance to really get into this, but I certainly didn't. And just scanning through it in the time I had, I didn't see any major red flags, and so I'm looking forward to the next opportunity to comment. So.
Well, thank you very much. Okay. I really appreciate the time you put into looking at what you had. provided.
Thank you.
I got all your.
We might have some follow-up questions for you, but we'll give you a call. You know.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to speak at this time?
Kathy, got any questions?
I do. I have
one.
Okay.
And I'll add.
All right.
Okay.
Just a very short question, Gail Robinette, Cambria. On the monitoring that you have in the report, who's doing that monitoring?
Well, we do a lot of the monitoring on the groundwater elevations. It's our water department that goes around. I know our wells are at least, if not once a week, you know, twice a month at the very minimum frequency. We'll have a talk with them about maybe including Mr. Bedotti's wells more frequently, if that's possible. A lot of our groundwater quality is regulatorily driven by our permits, so we do that as well. Particularly the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, does what they call their CCAMP, or their Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program. So we have some key sample points that the regional board tracks on surface water, because they're focused a lot on the surface water quality. So there's at least probably three or four of those stations along the creeks. Beyond that, I might be blanking on a few other things, but.
Yeah, you mentioned regional water quality.
Yeah.
Control board.
I think that's the gist of it for right now.
So it does have a bit, multiple agencies in that do collect, and then we have access to that information as
yes
CST.
if it's with a state agency, we certainly would. I mean, if there was a private well owner, that might be private information. I know there's been some changes in the regulations recently that I need to get up to speed on, particularly as it relates to confidentiality on well information, as far as which information is considered confidential. This draft, I just considered anything privately owned was off limits confidential, but it may be that voluntarily wise, or whatever the regs are, we can show a little more detail, particularly on the chart that's there on the monitoring wells.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Jan Podoti again. Yeah, a quick amendment to word. Or addition to what I said on the date, on the 1978, the date that the wells were drilled in 1978. But you are right that they began production in San Simeon Creek in 1979, which is, you got those. So it was actually in March of 1979 that Cambria got its first water from San Simeon Creek.
Okay, we'll try to clarify that better. Okay. Thank you.
Or the devil manager. That was stressful.
Yeah. Any other questions out there? If not, we'll adjourn.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Really, really
thank you very much. Really appreciate your efforts.